everyone, and welcome to episode 573 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have a special guest this week. For the first time in a minute, we got Tomer on the podcast. Tomer, good to have you. How's it going?
Thanks for having me. It's, I think, the first time since I got banned in the Vegas, I was in the Vegas podcast for the main channel years ago, and I got banned for swearing all the time.
There was a lot of cursing in the Vegas podcast. But against our better judgment, we have let Tomer come back to talk some Pro Tour lore win Eclipse, because Tomer, I know you actually watched the Pro Tour this weekend, so I'm excited to have someone else who watched we can talk with. But we got another host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. You know, it feels good. Demir won the Pro Tour.
How happy are you, bro?
I'm sorry. I jumped up and down at that. So that's a good thing.
We were texting during the finals. It was such a hype game too, but we'll get into it.
The finals. Yeah. The finals were really good. And at least it wasn't Demir mid-range. At least it was a unique take on Demir.
I would have been fine with that.
So anyway, today, big topic, Pro Tour lore win Eclipse. But we also got some early spoilers, which is interesting, from Secrets of Strixhaven that we're going to get into later. Also some sad news from the community that we're going to talk about. But really, Pro Tour lore win Eclipse and some other stuff today. But before we get into it, a couple of reminders. Today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy a listing, well, you can skip them with Card Conduit. Normally, if you use our code MTGGoldfish, you'll get 10% off your order. But any new shipment that's created between February 1st and February 14th, the discount's going to be doubled up to 20%. So if you want to sell some cards and get a fast payment without all the work, head over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish or use the code MTG Goldfish at checkout to get 20% off. So Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show's also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The RFG Deckbox Max features a clear window to showcase your commander while protecting your deck. Available in three different sizes to fit all your decks, including a standard deck and a commander deck, the Equip Mag system lets you attach optional dice boxes or even multiple decks together. Head over to heavyplay.com/MTGGoldfish or use the code MTGGoldfish to save 10% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic, and let's start with Pro Tour Lore and Eclipse. So this weekend was Pro Tour Lore and Eclipse. It was Standard and Lore and Eclipse Limited. And I gotta say, before we get into all the decks and stuff, this has to be one of the better Standard Pro Tours that we have had in a long, long time. I know, Tomer, you watched a bunch of it. Krim, did you get to see any of the Pro Tour this weekend? What did you think overall?
Oh, I mean, from all the bits that I saw, it looked great. There was a lot of Sunderflock. I was very unhappy when I opened my Lorwyn boxes and I just kept getting Sunderflock. So I was like, oh man, this is just some Commander bulk. And then now this weekend, Stunks. It's like, oh hey, never mind. I don't hate Sunderflock anymore. But no, like legitimately. This was a very, very interesting deck list. There's a lot of different brews running around, and I think that was one of the more interesting things to see. Like the entire meta seemed like it was like really cooking.
Yeah, definitely ended up different than I would have expected. Tomer, what did you think? What was your first impression of Pro Tour Lore and Eclipse?
I mean, I don't usually watch Pro Tour that much, but like my partner Rodrigo and the boys at Card Market, Torolf and Carl, they have a tradition of just like getting together and watching the Pro Tour together. And I tag along, obviously. And in this case, Carl from Card Market, he came from Berlin over to us, stayed with us over the weekend to watch it. And like, I was going to just like, you know, cook and stuff in the background and hang out in general vicinity while they watch. But like, it was so good. This Pro Tour was so much better than the ones I've been half watching in the past. There's so much deck diversity. I thought it would be like a very solved meta. You know, like first we had Badger Mole, and then like, is it looting showed up and it dominated? So are we just going to have like, is it looting? Is this going to just be destroying and being just all the top eight, just mirror matches? Like, no, like Badger Mole got destroyed this time. And is it looting did not look that strong. Like people just sideboarded against these two decks and it worked. Like they were beat. And like, if you look at the top eight, I think there's like seven unique decks in the top eight. It's so cool. And they are so neat. They feel so commandery. Demon Lord Excruciator is such a commander card. It's so cool. And there's like the Harmonizer deck is playing the freaking One Punch Man over here. It's like so sick. This set is so, the standard makes me so hyped to actually play. And I haven't played standard in years. Yeah. So cool.
I mean, that is a big testament to how good this Pro Tour was. If Tomer is hyped for it, when you don't even play Standard that much, and you don't usually watch Pro Tours, and you're this hyped about it, and I gotta agree with you, it was a really good Pro Tour. Heading into it, I was kind of nervous, because they released, like, the day one metagame numbers, and I think 45% of decks were playing, like, the Badger Mole Cub package. Simic Rhythm was number one, Bant Rhythm was number two, and then you got, like, the Airbending decks in there, you got Five Color Rhythm decks. So if you add that all together, it felt like Badger Mole Cub versus the rest of Standard. It turns out, though, now that we have the results in the books, there was really nothing to worry about, because Badger Mole Cub kind of got smacked. Optimist Tom TV over on Twitter does all these breakdowns of the win rates of Pro Tours. And if you look at the most played decks of the tournament, Simic Rhythm, Bant Rhythm, 45%, 42%. This Sultai Reanimator deck, the third most played deck, 38%. Bant Airbending, 44%. So really all the decks that people thought were the best decks in Standard going into this did not perform well on the weekend. On the other hand, we had all these like surprise decks show up, like Elemental decks did really well. The deck that won the tournament, I know, Krim, you like this deck. Tomer does too. This Dimir Excruciator deck, that's a deck that I've seen people play Excruciator control decks before, but this is kind of different, right? You're not only playing Excruciator, which if you don't know Excruciator, it's this like million black mana symbol demon.
Six.
That when it,
just six.
Six black mana symbol demon. Then when
six
it enters.
Drop in Standard, by the
when
way.
When it enters, yes, in Standard. When it enters, you exile all except the bottom six cards of each player's library. And then you got to draw an extra card on your upkeep. So you basically make everyone have tiny decks and then try to win from there. But kind of the innovation with this is it's a superior Spider-Man deck, so you can get your Excruciator on the battlefield on the cheap for just 4 mana, and then there's some cool tricks to actually winning with it once you get it down. So this deck, we're gonna go through the top eight. This ended up being the first place deck. Christopher Larson, who I absolutely love, just such a fun person to play Magic with. I've met him a couple times at Magic Cons. So congrats to Chris on winning. But Krim and Tomer, why don't you guys break down this deck? This is kind of in your wheelhouse. Krim is a control player. What do you
this
think
is
of this Excruciator list?
Well, first off, okay, day one, when I saw that Javier, you know what I mean? Javier brought this, and I was like, okay, there's like six, maybe seven other people. I called shot right there. I was like, this is the sickest deck of the Pro Tour right now. Because it is, right? I mean, the innovation of actually just incorporating Superior Spider-Man and not being as fragile to like a simple like Rest in Peace, right? Whereas like, you know, if you play Sultai Reanimator, you could see its win rate at 38%. That showed how like kind of fragile that deck is, right? So you kind of merge these two decks together and now you've got this absurdly good win plan. And then on top of that, since Spider-Man gets the cast when you cast anything, that means that if the Excruciator's in the graveyard, you get to 4 mana do what it was doing. And then all you simply do is just win with like Arisen Reef. Mm-hmm. But there's another innovation that was added to this list because, you know, Javier won with this list before. Right. And I thought that was awesome already. But this time I can't remember. I don't remember last time they had as many Insatiable Avarices. So this is like another out to like forcing your opponent to draw in the event that, you know, like you don't have your Risen Reef or all your Risen Reefs have died. So I think this is kind of like a Dimir. I don't know. I call it a combo deck more than anything. It feels like a combo deck, but there's nothing better than watching two players lock in when they're down to six cards, right? Like these, like once you're down to six cards, no more dilly-dallying. Yeah. Sometimes Izzet decks are just setting up, right? And they've set up on the earlier turn, so there's like four copies of like, I don't know, the artist talent and so many things that loot. So like, you saw it in the finals there with Harmonizer where they like Tony got locked into like, well, if I play a land, I mill and I cannot afford that. And that's kind of like the same situation sometimes with the Izzet deck. It's like, okay, if you play demon, I can't loot, right? I can't just be popping off on all my card draw. It's so nice. It's so nice. And also Deceit has been an all-star watching that play of, okay, I'm going to play Deceit, put it in the graveyard. Then I Superior Spider-Man. black, black, blue, blue. I get both modes, bounce, and then discard something. Woo! That is so good. I'm sorry. Yeah. That was just like, I was sweating. I was like, this is, oh, I can't handle how good this is.
The deck felt so, like, so synergistic and so clean. Like, the idea of just, like, I Excruciator, which, okay, first of all, I would never have suspected this card as being standard playable, by the way. Demon Lord Excruciator, I know it came out a long time ago at this point, but, like, when this was previewed, did anybody call it, be like, wow, this is going to break standard, you guys?
No, or was it just,
into the commander pile? Did anybody have that? I know, like, Javier got, obviously, won a Pro Tour with it, or Worlds. He won Worlds with it, right?
Worlds, yeah.
Worlds. He won Worlds with it. So, obviously, it did prove itself in Sarah, which I just absolutely love. But, like, this strategy just feels so dramatic and exciting to me. You put both people at six, and like Krim said, all these top decks are, like, so focused on milling and drawing cards and looting that when you put them at six, like, just by taking basic game actions, they're going through the deck so quickly that they just, like, suddenly aren't able to cast half the spells or use half the cards on the board, and then just, like, hitting them with the restlessly one time. It's a land, taps for black, blue, can animate it, and as soon as you hit with it, as soon as you attack with it, you don't have to hit with it, you mill four. So that's enough. That's enough. They already die. And then Insatiable Avarice is pay three, draw three, but you could also target your opponent, so they just die with that too. And then Deceit is like Superior Spire. Deceit is already a great card. We've seen it a bunch of times, just like being so versatile. But then Superior Spider-Man, paying four mana, double blue, double black, just like bounce something and immediately duress it out of their hand too, so you can get rid of like Monument to Endurance or anything. Like everything was firing on all cylinders. And then like the sideboard package, like, okay, like you just fill up with all the duresses and stuff that are relevant to your matchup, and you just empties their hand over and over again, and it just feels like it's very satisfying to watch. But I was rooting for Harmonizer.
Yeah, it is kind of wild. It plays a little like, I don't know. You have the control elements right in Dimir, but it does kind of feel like the classic, modern Jun rock kind of play style. I'm just going to strip you of every card you've got.
Yeah.
And then, like, the combo, the demon combo is, like, kind of in the back seat. It is a thing you can do, and it's nice that you have that. But, like, you can just win on the back of smacking with a good old 5/5 deceit, right? Like, that. Yep. It's so nice. It's such a sweet deck. And the only thing I would probably remind everyone is that this is the Pro Tour. So direct copying this to like whatever online meta or local meta you might have may, you know, the sideboards are accounting for like the Pro Tour. So, so something I wanted to add was Glen Alendra to the sideboard just because of that ability to counter a non-creature and force a draw. Can be nice, right? And
that is I
liked that the whole time while finals is like, you know, kind of like happening, at least this match, I think Tomer and I were kind of chuckling because it's like, hey, is that there's a Sandman spy, like hearing the commentators go, oh, spider sense is insanely important right now.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Superior Spider-Man versus Sandman on the other side, and the spider sense backing him up. It was like, maybe we're all wrong about the Spider-Man set. Maybe it's actually fire.
Whoa,
and we're all...
You can't say that. On air, Tomer. People are gonna get mad.
Yeah, it has about a card and a half that, or maybe fire, but as far as the rest of the deck, so the Dimir Excruciator deck, it was cool. Mm-hmm. It was neat to see Chris win because I like Chris. So it was a really sweet deck. The second place deck, though, that was the one that really caught my eye. And I think this one, I believe, is a brand new deck. And I fancy a little bit of a stretch because we've seen Might Farm Harmonizer be good in standard. There's a bunch of different landfall decks built around Might Farm Harmonizer. You got like Selesnya, you got Mono Green, you got Gruul. But what this deck did that was different, and I think really sweet, and this was played by Tony Portolan, but also this was, I believe, Team Sanctum of All. Like, they always are building these combo decks. They built the Otters deck like a season ago. So they love these combo decks. But anyway, this deck, it's a Might Farm Harmonizer their deck. But the innovation here is you're not playing all of their creatures. There's no Zaz Chocobo. There's none of this landfall synergies. This deck is purely, I'm going to play Lightform Harmonizer with Warp, and then I'm going to use Full Bore to give it Trample and Haste for one mana. And then if I can make enough land drops to double its power a few times, I just one-shot kill you. So it plays like a full-on combo deck. You're just kind of like digging through your deck. You're playing some removal spells and trying to set up this one-turn kill combo. And there were some absurd kills with this deck. Like in the finals, there was a couple times where like the commentary team was like, there is no way this game is over, like scoop them up. And then the next thing you know, it's like 30 trample damage out of nowhere from like one card in hand or zero cards in hand. The deck is just so explosive. So this deck is my kind of deck. You got the combos going on, you got the jank going on. So I really love just the direction they took Harmonizer. But what do you guys think about the runner-up deck? Because I think this deck is also super cool.
It was unfortunate for Chris to have like not played Deceit.
That was a pun, right?
I personally could see why you want to have Deceit to then go and for sure clear the way, get the discard, no spider sense, no nothing, right? Yep. But at the same time, removing the trample is really important there in case there is a Harmonizer. And of course, you know, in that situation, it's got to be Harmonizer, right? It's got to be Harmonizer. Also, that through line of that turn, you know, and earthbending your fabled passage to then crack it to bring it back. And then I'm like, it doesn't even matter if you have a basic to get, right? And I'm just like, oh, that was beautiful, right? That was beautiful. Like, normally, you could say what you want. Is that a punt? But the main thing is you also have to see the line after the punt to punish, right? And Tony was able to punish there, and oh my god, that's Pro Tour magic, right? That's like, that's what I'm talking about.
That's how I know I cannot play at this level, because like the Teemer Harmonizer deck looks like it's a combo deck, yes, but it also feels like a 5,000 IQ combo deck, because like every like his turn to win the game is like sequencing like 15 freaking things, and I'm thinking like the Brazilian lady math meme where it's going like the math equation are going all over your head. That'd be me, except I just like my rope out and I go to time, and then the opponent finishes me off, because it was like 15 different little things he has to do to calculate that he has enough damage to actually win out of nowhere of this thing. It was very, very impressive. Tony like played like a madman. I was so, so impressed. There was a lot of lines that he figured out that I would not have, and I have the advantage of watching as a spectator, so it's much easier for me not having any pressure on me and stuff. It was really, really cool to watch him. And then it was also wonderful to see, like, the casters were saying, like, oh, Teemer Harmonizer is going up against Jeskai Control. It's a very bad matchup for Harmonizer. It looks like the Control deck's going to have an easy win. Fast forward, Tony 5-0s. He 5-0s. He crushes 2-0s and then goes to the finals 3-0s. It was, like, insane. It was insane. Yeah. I loved it. It was so fun to watch.
Yeah, Tony played that deck really well. Like, it was, you could tell, like, that he had a lot of practice with it, very good at it. There was also just a fun clash of personalities in the finals, because Christopher Lawson is just, like, very talkative and just kind of jolly. And then Tony, not as talkative. He was very, like, serious and, like, short answers to the point, like, I'm just going to kill you, I'm going to win the game. So that was fun, too, to just see the different personalities coming out.
There was like a little smirk on his face, and you could tell this is the most joy he's ever experienced. You know, like this is like the little hint of a grin. The aura from this man, off the charts. I'm a fan for life. I've never seen Tony play in my life before. He's my favorite pro player already. Already, I'm a Tony fan for life. What can I say?
As far as the rest of the top eight, we had two Excruciator decks. We had an Is It Lessons deck, basically the stock build that we've had for a while. Airbending was one of the two Badger Mole Cub decks, along with a Five Color Rhythm deck, which another Badger Mole Cub shenanigan deck got in. Jeskai Control made it. And then the other deck I found most interesting was actually some Elementals representation. We had a Is It Elemental deck. There was also some other colored Elemental decks that did well. quite make the top eight. But Elementals, I think, was one of the winners of this tournament. If you just look at win rates and, like, overall how well the decks did. And this caught me by surprise because I really wasn't sure the Elementals were going to be a real standard deck. But it seems like just playing all the good Elementals together along with Roaming Throne, like, this deck is almost a block deck from Lorwyn Eclipse. Like, almost all your cards are from the set outside of Roaming Throne. What do you make of Elementals? Like, is this a Pro Tour deck, Krim, or do you think this is a part of the standard meta going forward? Are Elementals, like, a real tier archetype?
I just want to say that the versions of Elementals that made it in are not the ones I wanted to get in.
What did you want in? What do you want? Scam Elementals?
Say it with me, Seth. Say it with me, Tomer. Grixis Elementals.
Grixis.
Right.
There's deceit in there. Grixis.
Yeah, deceit's in there.
I see three deceits in there.
Well, you know, it went Grixis Elementals went 9-1. And I thought that was a sweet build because at the same time, there's a few things I didn't when we were in early Lorwyn, I had filmed a Grixis Elemental deck, thinking it was a meme. Because, you know, like, I guess I was halfway cooking with the pros. I was like, Flamebraider seems kind of nuts, right? And along with Ashling, and are these cards not just kind of like pseudo Badger Mole Cubs?
No, I mean, not Badger Mole Cubs, it's on the two.
Yeah, like these cards are all really good, right? And being able to speed out all of your elementals, like just being able to do a lot of silly stuff with these cards, I think elementals. I mean, okay, if they run into a Torp Orb, I think they lose. But the main thing here is
they got
that
bounce off.
Yeah, bounce it.
They need the bounce off.
They can unsummon it.
Oh, it doesn't hit Torp Orb, though.
Oh, my God, it doesn't even hit Torp Orb. Yeah, they're screwed. They're screwed, actually. Yeah. Never mind.
I mean, that's why there's Torp Orbs in the sideboards of a lot of decks right now, as you're seeing. But yeah, I think this deck seems really strong because at the end of the day, you're still cheating out giant bodies. Right? Like, if you let the Ashlings and the Flamebraiders stick, ooh. Oh, yeah. Man, that's going to get real rough real quick.
Go ahead, Tomer.
Is this not just like a commander deck? Like this is the four of a Roaming Throne in standard of all places. We've got just good old turn two ramp as a commander player would always do with the Ashlings and the Flamebraiders into just like big six drop and five drop elementals. Like, is this how you get commander players to play standard? You just make standard just a bunch of commander decks? Is this like what's
it
going on?
It does feel like a Timmy deck.
It does feel pretty I mean, I played Commander Ashling for Commander Clash not that long ago, and I was playing a lot of these cards in it, so I feel like, it does kind of seem like a Commander deck. It is very, like, you see Sunderflock at 9 mana and all these 6 drops with Evoke, and it feels like a lot of Commander-y creatures. I will say, it's funny to see Roaming Throne be so good in Standard. Like, that's a card that I think it was printed, everyone was like, that's a good Commander card, but no one expected it to really see Standard play. And I played it a few times because I just love my Panharmonicons. And every time I played it, I was like, man, this card actually feels kind of good. But I think it's cool to see it actually break out in, like, top 8 of Pro Tour and prove that it actually is a real card. The other thing I'd say is Torp Orb even the end of the world, Krim? Because, like, yes, it shuts down your synergies, but at the same time, you can just evoke your stuff and play big beaters for 2 mana, right? Like, I've seen people debate whether you can, like, I've seen people actually play Torpor Orb in Elementals, like, actually sideboard it in and just try to, like, evoke their Elementals for 2 mana, and you get your 6/6 or 5/5 for 2 mana and just beat down.
Wait, does that work?
Because it stifles the evoke element, evoke trigger. Evoke is an enters trigger. So you won't get the positive enters trigger, but you do get to keep the body on the battlefield, too.
That's very interesting.
But the thing here is, like, then you're not getting the main powerhouse, right? If you're just playing vanilla creatures, right? Like, you're not getting your Sunderflock. You're not resetting my board. I'm sorry, but I think I would rather take the let's try to beat your deck, right? You know, through regular means of fighting through, like, removal. And if you're playing vanilla 5/5s, I guess 2 mana 5/5s, which is still really good, right? Don't get me wrong. Like, I still think you need to make sure those 2-drop elementals die, because if not, then you're getting 2 5/5s a turn. But you're not getting that value where I feel like I just cannot beat, right? Like, all of the constant drowning from drawing and discarding and all of that. Like, I can't beat all of that. This allows me to have a fighting chance. So I would still play Torp Orbs and things like that.
So let me ask you guys. So those are the top 8 decks. what do you think about Standard going forward from here? So the results this weekend are probably not what most people would expect, especially looking at the win rates. It was just definitely not the most popular deck succeeding. Does this mean Badger Mole Cubs not a problem anymore? Is this a case of, like, the pros figured it out for this weekend, but then once you go to your LGS or back to Arena, Badger Mole Cubs still going to be everywhere? Like, do you think this represents a big shift in the Standard meta? Or was this, like, some weird pro tour thing where everyone just, like, teched in on Badger Mole Cub and managed to beat it for the weekend? What does this mean for us moving forward, do you think, Krim and Tomer?
I mean, look, okay, the people are going to be playing what they've built. Right. And I still think the one thing about online is that this does not mean that, like, people are just going to stop playing Badger Mole Cup. Right. I imagine there's just a good amount of people that are just playing what they've already crafted. And Badger Mole Cup has a lot of rares and mythics between its mana base, which do not line up with Dimir Excruciator. The one thing that is on the bright side of Dimir Excruciator is that I feel a lot of people built this way back. Right. During Duskmourn. So that part is fun. I think this is going to show that Standard is going to have a lot of decks on the ladder. And I kind of already been seeing a lot of different decks on the ladder. And this kind of further reinforces that, like, that like idea. And I don't know. This is good. This is going to be everything. The Standard meta is just going to be a little bit of everything. And the Standard meta is pretty damn fun when you can see that Yellow Hat, Gabriel Nassif, and some others, like Reed Duke, piloted this masterpiece, a work of art.
Blue black control.
Yeah, it was. It was a beautiful masterpiece. Yeah. All right. Pure control, only win cons are Wan Chi Tong, which is also really good with all of the searching from Formidable Speaker and whatnot, and like a Meringue River Regent. Everything else is just counter spells, and then, you know that meme, those decks where it's like, oh, I'm going to unmoored ego you and do those surgical extraction dot deck. Well, kind of actually real, because you deadly cover up, pick off the main win con and whatever are four ofs, and you literally just wait until they deck out.
Yeah, it kind of actually works.
That is a masterpiece of a deck. And if you're telling me this meta can allow for all of that and whatever the hell Badger Mole Cub decks are running around, this means that you have everything, right? And there's a pseudo combo deck. There's almost every archetype you could play. And believe it or not, maybe aggro didn't have a great showing, but that doesn't mean you won't run into it on the ladder. So
Yeah.
I'm still going to see mono red aggro, just people trying to get, like, their quests done or whatever. So
Gotta play the fast deck sometimes.
You still
gotta
respect it.
Badger Mole Cub's still busted. Like, yes, it didn't do well this weekend, but that card is still super, super busted. So I don't think we've reached the end of Badger Mole Cub by any stretch.
Do you think that's changed? Because before, right? Like we used to think that, all right, Badger Mole Cub, I think, is absolutely nuts, right? And it is, it is. But requiring Hex and Spell Snare, do you think because these two cards exactly? Because, like, you're looking at the blue-black control deck, it's four copies of each of those, right? And every black deck has four copies of Hex. So have those cards kind of kept the Badger Mole Cub in check?
I mean, this weekend they did. So here's my thinking. Like, I think if you are Nassif and you build blue-black control and you want to be Badger Mole Cub, you can probably do it. I think for the average Arena ladder player, I think you're still going to see a lot of people just default to, I'm just going to spew out with Badger Mole Cub and, like, make 10 mana on turn 3 and try to hoof you. And I think it's still going to be a problem at lower levels of play, if that makes sense. I know Wizards has mentioned a few times in their ban list updates, there's just, like, kind of two different standards. We have, like, competitive standard and then less competitive standard. And, like, their bannings try to take those both into consideration, and if something doesn't necessarily have to, like, do well on the Pro Tour to be a problem in less competitive standard or vice versa. So I still think that if you're not playing Pro Tour or Worlds, that it's probably, like, kind of a problematic card. Just, like, it's this really strict removal check on turn two, and it's just, like, so fast for what I would think Standard was supposed to be about. Yeah. So even though these results aren't good, I'm still a little concerned that Badger Mole Cub, like, I'm more worried about Badger Mole Cub than the decks that did well this weekend, honestly, as far as just, like, playing the ladder on Arena.
I mean, it definitely warps the format, right? Like, if you cannot consistently answer a turn two Badger Mole Cub with your deck, then your deck is not playable. Like all of these decks that we saw do well in the Pro Tour, they had to answer a turn two Badger Mole. And that means they have to have like 7, 8 or more answers to the Badger Mole in the main deck and then more in the sideboard. And the thing that I like, at least, is that it is answerable. Like at top level play, we can clearly see this is not like a VV Cauldron situation where like everybody's ready for it. Nobody can answer it. This is like people, if you're ready for it, you can answer it. And that's good. But yeah, I do understand. I understand the worry about like at lower level play. If you want to just like jam something more chill, like whatever brew you got, like, if your brew doesn't have answers to the Cub online, you're not going to be doing too much. And I think Cub is also just very popular because it's a fun card for casual players, like people who doesn't like slamming some green things and making a ton of mana and dropping down a Crater Hoof super early. Like,
I don't like that.
It's just like Commander. Yeah, I know. These decks are just like Commander decks. I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm actually more worried about Cub and Commander because it's just like, Who's running a firebending lesson in like in all your decks? Yeah. You know, like if you have to have like 8 answers to a Cub, what's the equivalent in a 99 card deck? It's too much. So I don't like these designs in general. But like, I guess for me, it's not going to be an issue if I get into standard. My issue is I don't have rare wild cards. So I tried to build the Excruciator deck last night, and I was like, oh, I can't. So oops. So I don't know. How do you guys solve that issue, by the way, content creators?
I'm spending money, I guess, is the actual answer that I go to, as frustrating as it can be sometimes. But I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the actual issue with Standard right now, if there is an issue, because it was very diverse, we saw a bunch of new decks, like everything you'd want out of a Pro Tour. But I do think there's one problem right now, and that problem is it's an expensive format. Like, we now have 2 decks in Standard that are pushing $1,000. So already the Badger Mole Cub decks were already close to $1,000. And now the Elemental decks are in the $900 to $1,000 price range, because like all the Evoke Elementals are super expensive now. So now we have 2 presumably tier decks that are going to be like close to $1,000. And then even some of the cheaper decks, like Excruciators, $500, Lessons is $500. Like, they're not that cheap. So do you guys think this is an issue? I saw a post on Reddit where someone was like, I want to buy into Standard, but the deck's super expensive and I'm afraid it's going to get banned, so I'm not buying into Standard. And I was like, yeah, I could see that worry. Yeah. Right, there have been a lot of bannings and decks are super expensive. So what do we do about this price thing? Like, is this just the new normal? I know we've talked about Standard turning into Modern from like a decade ago speed wise is it also doing that price rise? Do we just have to get used to spending $1,000 to buy one of the best decks in Standard?
Okay, the game as a whole has definitely gotten pricier. And so isn't that how much you paid back when, though? Like, way back when? I feel like I've always paid roughly around $300 to $500 for a Standard deck.
Yeah, I think probably somewhere in that range is probably about right. Oh, man, there's an article. I wonder if I can find it. I did an article on this a long time ago where I could find the actual numbers. But I know $1,000... is not normal. Like, I remember when we had Jace Friend's Prodigy Standard, and it was like $1,000 deck. That was like a big topic of conversation, and it was 10 years ago, so inflation and all that stuff. So I think that's the outlier. So the decks being like $300 to $500, I don't think is the end of the world. But seeing multiple decks be approaching $1,000 in Standard, that's the part that kind of stands out to me.
I mean,
yeah,
as someone who hasn't had a paper Standard deck in like over a decade at this point, there's no way I would be able to afford going into these things. There's no way you could tell me like, oh, Standard's really great, but you have to drop like at least $600 to play the deck that you want to play. I would be like, no.
Wouldn't you be better off building like $12, $50 commander decks or something? I think you would get way more enjoyment out of that probably than one $600 Standard deck.
I mean, the structure of like the decks right now is like $200 in the mana base. Then the play set of Badger Mole Cubs is like $300, right? And then the play set of Quantum Riddlers is like $2.
That's where all the money is.
And I mean, this is going to be a pickle, because like, I opened probably like, I don't know, 6 boxes of Avatar, and I got 1 Badger Mole Cub.
Yeah. I don't know if I opened any in my boxes. I was like very few when I opened them too. Yeah.
And then the same with Edge of Eternities, right? And these are like, I would say Edge of Eternities is going to be even scarier because it's such a small set, right? Or it's such it was an awkwardly timed set that probably didn't get enough time to shine and enough product circulation.
So not
right?
enough would be opened. Yeah. So supply might be lower. Yeah.
So Quantum Riddler being the mythic and being like, you know, 50, 60 bucks per base rarity is very expensive. And I am worried about that. So I don't know. I mean, it's a bit of a concern. We're up from the era of like, you know, we took it for granted, I pretty much would say, like during the Shealdred Apocalypse era, we're outside of Shealdred, who was like 80 bucks. Every card was a place that was like maybe $4. Right. Yeah. Like something like that. And so it feels like we're way far past that now. I don't know why. Like if it were just like a Universes Beyond thing, then that would have made Standard more expensive. Then that'd be fine. Call it a day. But the thing here is I'm seeing like the Universes Beyond cards aren't the ones that are absurdly expensive. Not all of them, except for Badger Mole Cub. Right.
Yeah, I think when a staple like Badger Mole Cubs comes from a Universes Beyond set, it'll end up being even more expensive than it was from an in-universe set because the like sealed product is a little bit more expensive because of MSRP. But as you said, Badger Mole Cub is ridiculously expensive, $275 for a playset. But Quantum Riddler is like $218 a playset, and that's an in-universe set. I think the issue is this. And this is a lesson we learned a long time ago with Lotus Cobra. I'm talking 15 years ago now.
World Wake?
Or
Zendikar?
Way back in the beginning of the Mythic era, really.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you just don't want to print the standard cards and constructed cards that people need four of in their competitive decks at Mythic if you can help it. Like, I honestly think Badger Mole Cub is exactly an example of a card that should not be a Mythic. Like, it's really just a souped up mana dork and it shouldn't be bumped up in rarity. Because if it was printed at rare, it would be annoying, but it'd be like 20 bucks a copy. But now that it's at a Mythic, you're talking whatever, 70 bucks a copy or something almost. So I think that's the actual solution is when it comes to cards like Badger Mole or like Quantum Riddler even, I don't think you need to put them in Mythic. I can't see a real good justification for it outside of making more money because I don't think that they're going to show up enough to ruin Limited anyway. But I don't know. That would be my takeaway is some cards got to be at Mythic for whatever reason. Like, I don't have issue with the Evoke Elementals being at Mythic. They feel very Mythic to me. We have some historical precedent there. But when you see a mana dork like Badger Mole Cub at Mythic, I kind of groan a little bit. And I'm like, that's just going to be so expensive for no real good reason.
I will say calling Badger Mole Cub just a mana dork is almost disrespectful
souped
to
up,
Badger Mole Cub.
Souped up mana dork, but yes.
I mean, I feel like every single solution is just like, Wizards of the Coast, can you please make less profits for us so we can play Standard?
Yeah.
Like, that's where it really comes down to. It's like, you could say like, this should be a Mythic, this shouldn't be. It's like, they're going to print the most desirable cards in Mythic so they can sell more packs if they think it's going to sell more packs. And then also they can do is like, they can make play boosters cheaper too, so that it's easier for people to crack packs, maybe increase supplies. My like super radical idea that I've been pushing for a long time is that like, they just, for like the baseline version of cards, they have a way that they can sell those cards directly. And it's like a set price for all those cards. It's like any single rare is out there that you can buy directly from Wizards of the Coast is like $5. Mythics, I don't know, $10. It could be that.
So IRL
those
Arena.
Things, that IRL Arena, but base versions. And then everything that's like foil, showcase frame, all these things, you know, you still have to open them from packs. The packs can be bajillion dollars. Who cares? You could find the serialized version.
The Tomer.
But then the base version is also always like, it's always capped in the price on what they have. And they can like send it to you direct or something so we can avoid those issues. But I know that's like going to make the money and it logistical nightmare and stuff. Yeah, I know.
Issues with that plan. Yeah. One, LGSs. Right. You want to have the LGSs kind of sell stuff. Right. So I think that would take away from the LGS. Two. In the year of God damn it, scalpers. Like, that's just not possible, right?
It would obliterate scalpers, though. Well, I mean, the collector booster stuff and stuff, they can scalp away like crazy, but like, just the base version of cards should be affordable, I think. Let people who just want to play the cards, and like, I'm saying that as somebody who says, I want to play the cards, but I'm going to get the blinged versions, you know?
Sure, I'm going to make
incorrect financial decisions with my life, and I'm going to buy the super fantasy thing for my changeling decks. But, like, I don't know. I feel like I feel there could be a way where you can support the LGS with, like, all the super fancy crap and maybe make the play boosters super cheap, too. And then, like, the super fancy stuff is only exclusive to the collector stuff. And scalpers and collectors will be happy that way, too. You go for the shiny thing and then the people who want to play just play.
This is the era of what I mean by Sheoldred, because, like, I love that the base version outside of Sheoldred was actually, like, 50 cents, right? And then whatever fancier versions from there, sure. But, like, I do not need the fanciest version. I just want to be able to play with the cards. I would love that method, but, like, I do not have faith in any trading card game to predict the right numbers of how much is needed to print to sell from a website, right? Like, I think that every card game right now, if you're trying to get into card games in 2026, it is impossible. Like, because there's never enough product anywhere across the board. And allocation's rough unless you're, like, the biggest store in a certain area, and even then. And I don't know, playables, like commons and things like that. I'm experiencing that through other card games as well, right? Where it's just, like, I can't find even the base version of stuff. And I think that's, if your game is popping off, you're gonna run into scalpers.
Being able to get them all through, like, a WotC website would be sweet. Like, I do see the risk of, like, hurting LGSs, although that's sadly never stopped Wizards in the past. I mean, there's not. Well, I remember having the same conversation when they started selling booster boxes directly through Amazon and then Secret Lair cards directly through their website. So they've already taken many steps down this road. So it would be another blow to local game stores. I think the one main issue I would see is, like, most, if you price things at $5 rare, $10 or mythic, a huge percentage of cards I don't think anyone would ever buy because they wouldn't reach those price points. So it would be really beneficial for the handful of really expensive cards. But then I don't know how you'd realistically get people to buy, like, the bulk rares for $5. It's the same as Arena. That's why most people don't buy wild cards on Arena, because it's great if you need, like, one last card, but it's just too expensive if you're building an entire deck for the most part. But I wish there was some sort of solution. I've seen people suggest living card game style, too, where you just, like, put out the entire set in a box and you get all the cards, but I imagine that would kill Wizards' profits. There's a reason that all the big trading card games use booster packs, and that's because they make way more money than the living card games.
That's fair.
Anyway, let's move on. So that's the Pro Tour. We got a few more minutes. I want to mention some sad news, which Kai Buda, the greatest Magic player of all time, at least the greatest peak Magic player of all time, passed away, I believe, on Friday, like last week. I'm not sure really what to say other than it's super sad. We knew that Kai had terminal cancer. It was announced a year or two ago. Was able to, like, rename the Player of the Year trophy after him. There was a great video that they posted on Coverage of just kind of like a retrospective on Kai's life. But when I started playing, I started playing right after Kai's peak. Like, Kai's peak was 99 to 2003, but within 4 years, Kai won 7 Pro Tours. It was at, like, 3.5 years, which is unbelievable. No one else has won more than 3 in their entire careers. I think Finkel won 3 over the course of, like, 40 years, 30 years, like, over the game's entire history. And Kai did this in a 4-year period, and that'll just never be matched. And this isn't even, like, top 8s. This is literally winning. And that was always Kai's reputation, right? Is Kai would just never lose on Sundays. He would always end up winning the tournament once he got into the top 8. So, sad to see Kai go, but what a legacy he has in the game. Like, really, I think most would agree that at least the greatest peak of all time and one of the top, like, 3 players of all time, like, universally agreed.
The other thing that I also think is, like, very notable about Kai is over the years, even before, like, the announcement and, you know, the terminal cancer even was known to the public, was I just always heard the nicest things about him. Like, it always sounded like the pro players and people who knew of him always had, like, a story about him just being just, like, a really stand-up person. And that's always been, like, notable to me, is, like, whenever people, like, talk about a pro player, like, in particular for Kai, it was always about, like, how kind he is and how nice he is as a person. And, like, I heard so many stories. And then when the terminal cancer prognosis came out, I heard many, many more. And then, like, even, like, yesterday, I heard from Carl, from, like, another person who worked at Card Market, apparently played against Kai in some sort of tournament setting. And they were, like, in the finals. And that person suggested they split the winnings, and Kai agreed. And then Kai lost, and he just said, like, you can keep all the winnings, actually.
Aww.
He's just, like, a chill, like, just... Everything I heard was just like, yep. He's just the nicest, most chill person. So that's also like just like his legacy, too, is not just being like one of the best players to ever played Magic, but also just legendary kindness, legendary gentleman.
And that's the perfect kind of person you want to be the goat of your game, right? Someone who's not just like great at the game, but great as a person, too. But yeah. Krim, sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, no. I mean, I think that he's a legend, right? And I think when I had started playing, it would have been like maybe like tabletop wise, around was like 2001 maybe. So I still got my Void Mage Prodigies, and it's part of my prize collection. So in a way, I'll also always have a piece of Kai just in my collection running around. So I still keep that foil Void Mage Prodigy on me, and that card, I don't know, it's just such a legend to see somebody go on such a legendary run.
Yeah,
I got to play against him once. I got to play against him once too, and that's always going to be the highlights.
Wait, where did you play against?
There was an Ultimate Guard charity event, and it was online. I didn't get to be in person with him, but it was like a year ago. I think a year ago.
I'm trying to think if I've ever played against Kai. I don't know if I have. Maybe on Modo or something in a Super League that I'm not thinking of right now, but I'm not sure that I ever have.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to one more topic. So, in happier news. We got some super early Secrets of Strixhaven spoilers. This set is not releasing for 100 days or so, sometime in April. We got a minute still, but we got some super early spoilers, and I gotta say, these cards got me kind of hyped, because Strixhaven for me is kind of like a mid-plane for Magic. I would say it's kind of like average, like a 5 out of 10. So I wasn't like super excited about going back to it. I was like, okay, sure, whatever. Like, that's fine. But seeing these cards, they look so cool. So two cards, two mythics. Hopefully none of them will cost $100 a copy in the future. But one of them I gotta ask you about. Math Magics, a double blue and double X sorcery. It says target player draws 2x cards. So this is
no. It's 2 to the x, right?
2 to the x.
Yeah.
X cards. I'm going to read that properly.
Actually,
thank you.
You should actually. Two. This is the most actually card I've ever
seen. Actually,
if you don't have glasses while casting this, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you gotta be. This is a Zamone card. So this is one of the most powerful card draw spells ever printed. If you can cast it for a lot of mana, this is like doppelganger for card draw. If you're casting this at low mana values, it's pretty horrible, right? It's like draw 2 for 4 or whatever. Like, it's not very good. But once you get up to 14 mana, you can actually just deck someone on the spot and make them draw their entire deck in 60 card formats. And Commander, you need to go up a little bit more. I think you got to get to 16. What do you guys make of Math and Magics? Like, is this just a meme card, a funny math reference, or can this card actually see play anywhere, like in 60 card formats or in Commander?
I am very worried about the sorcery, right? You're spending so much mana, right, to get a sorcery speed draw spell, and I just feel like in Commander this can fly. I think a lot of things will happen in Commander, right? But I think in Standard, is there a deck that wants this now? Can you think of anything right now? Maybe something comes out in this set, and maybe something comes out. You know, there's a whole set prior to this, but I don't know. Maybe from a certain leak and all of that, I could safely say from what I've seen, nothing seems to, like, from Turtles makes me want to play this either, right? This is a big, funny card, a great name. And now I messaged my buddy Simo. He's a big Yu-Gi-Oh! Creator, right? I'm like, Simo, buddy, hey, we now have a linear equation beam too, you know? We get to do the Yu-Gi-Oh! Math joke now. So, this card, though, like, outside of, like, the, you know, fanfare and love for just, like, the 2 to the X whatever, that's going to be the most fun I'm going to have out of it. I don't think I'd play this in Standard.
I can see an argument for, like, it maybe being not in Standard. Like, In Standard, I could see it winning games, like, if you're going to ramp up to it. But, like, from a competitive perspective, 14 mana is just so much to actually kill someone with this, because it can target a player, so you just force your opponent to draw their deck. But I almost wonder if, like, in older formats, we have, like, High Tide shenanigans, and I don't know. So I've been doing this, like, Greatest Standard Deck Ever tournament with Richard, and I recently played the Talarian Academy deck from 1998. And that deck, the whole win con was you'd, like, make a ridiculous amount of mana, and then you would use a Stroke of Genius to force your opponent to draw the deck. And you need to generate, like, 60 mana to do this. This, yeah. I feel like, you do the same thing, but you can do it for, like, 14 mana, which is way cheaper. So I wonder if it could be a finisher for some sort of combo deck like that. I don't know if that exists in Standard. Maybe you could do some sort of, like,
Otters
tapping and untapping shenanigans, Badger Mole Cub, yeah, Enduring Vitality. Maybe there's, like, some Sanctum of All. Maybe Sanctum of All will break this at a future Pro Tour. It seems like that kind of card, that there could be a combo deck. But just playing it fairly seems unlikely to me. Tomer, you're the Commander expert. How good is this in Commander? Would you just, like, play this in a blue deck for card draw? Or do you have to be, like, some sort of meme deck where you're trying to use this as a win con or whatever?
Okay, my hot take, after seeing Doomsday Excruciator and Roaming Throne and Standard, I think this is more of a Standard card than a Commander
Ooh.
Card. I think it's more of a Standard card. There's going to be content creators coming out being like, oh, I'm using Badger Mole Cub. I'm going to make a lot of mana. Oh, duck ya. I think that's more likely. In Commander, it's just like, is like a sorcery speed, big mana sink, draw cards. Is that what we want to be doing? I feel like no. I would actually just run Stroke of Genius over this, to be honest, if I'm using it yeah. fairly. And then if like, oh, well, like it's easier to deck people with non-combo. But like in Commander, if you're running these type of cards, are you just doing infinite mana and then using this to kill people anyway? So I don't know. I think it's cute. And obviously in Commander, you can play whatever you want. I mean, it's not a competitive right. format. I'm like thinking bracket 3 and stuff. Like, would I play yeah. this ever? And the answer would be no. Bracket 2, absolutely yes. Bracket 1, if you're doing like a math theme deck, absolutely yes. It's totally playable. But like, I think it's probably going to be more exciting and Standard than Commander, personally
and
speaking.
I hope so, because I think this card's cool. And in Commander, like, killing one person doesn't win you the game. Like, part of the reason I'm hyped about in 60 card formats is it literally is like 14 mana, I win the game on the spot. In Commander, you get up to that amount of mana, you can make one person draw their deck, but that doesn't necessarily mean you win the game of Commander because you have multiple opponents. What about the other card that you spoiled? This one's also kind of exciting. A new Lorehold in Lorehold the Historian. So 5 mana Boros Elder Dragon. It's a 5/5 with flying and haste. So already a pretty good body. It says each instant and sorcery card in your hand has Miracle of 2. So Miracle, if you don't know it, if it's the first card that you drew for a turn, you can cast it for its Miracle cost. So essentially, if the first card you draw for a turn is an instant or sorcery, you can cast it for 2 rather than what it says. And then depending of each opponent's upkeep, you can discard a card to draw a card. So a way you can trigger Miracles potentially on each of your opponent's turn. What do you guys think of this card? Krim, is this a Standard card? I feel like 5/5 Flying Haste is like not a bad rate for a beater. I know 5 mana is a ton for a current Standard, but still 5 mana, 5/5 Flying Haste isn't bad. And the ability's cool. Can we see Miracles in Standard?
I would like to. I'm trying to think like what plays this, right?
And Boros Dragons
exist, yes.
It does exist.
They don't have any spells, though.
But like,
look at that backlist. I don't know what you're miracling, yeah.
Yeah, So Jeskai, because Jeskai Dragons does exist, right? Ooh, yeah, Chico. Yeah. So like, I could see this getting played. I think that Miracle 2 generic mana is very much so, that is a cost I like, right? So I could see this popping off.
I think we lost him.
I think we lost Krim mid sentence there.
Oh.
All right. So we talked to Krim. He's fine. He has Spectrum. Hooray. I know the pain.
Unexpected upgrade.
Of having Spectrum. And they randomly decided to upgrade his internet, apparently. He just got a text message. So
Yay.
We're gonna have to wrap this one without Krim. I will say Lorehold in Standard. I think just being a 5-mana 5/5 Flying Haste is interesting. There's not many creatures with those stats and abilities in Magic's history. It reminds me of Thundermaw Hellkite, which was really good in Standard, albeit back in Avacyn Restored, so we're talking 15 years ago or something. But 5-5 Flying Ace, like, four attacks to win the game. And then you get the upside of the Miracling thing. Obviously, like, Jeskai Revelation is the dream. If you're going to be casting that for two mana in a control deck, you're going to win the game really easily. So I think there's a chance, especially once we see more of Strixhaven. Maybe Miracles is a mechanic, or maybe it's a standalone on just Lorehold. We'll have to wait and see. So I wouldn't write this card off for Standard. I think, though, this looks to me like a very popular commander. We've already seen a Library of Lang spike in price because people are buying it out, thinking they can discard cards and put them on the top of their deck in Miraculum. Tomer, how good do you think this is in Commander? How exciting do you think it'll be? Is this going to be one of the more popular commanders from the set, maybe? Like, it kind of has that look to me.
It definitely looks like it. Boros Miracles is just like an interesting way of playing like high mana value Spellslinger. Like, that's just like you don't usually see that in Boros. So that's already kind of exciting. And I do think it's like a must kill commander, a new must kill commander. Yes. Like you mentioned, Library of Lang, red has a lot of ways of discarding and then drawing cards, or drawing and then discarding cards. So you can do this on opponent's turns very easily and trigger that ability. And then if you're discarding with Library of Lang, you put it back on top and then you draw it at the opportune moment to miracle it. And then they're just cast like really high mana value spells like Call Forth the Tempest, Double Cascade, wipe the board of your opponent's stuff, or like, what was it, Rise of the Eldrazi, take an extra turn, draw cards, blow up things, or Storm Herd and like flood the board with things. Scroll Rack, my beloved, is also very good with it. You can put the cards in your hand on top of your library and then miracle them. So there's a lot of really cool things you can be doing. Obviously, Boros is not like the best suited for all this top deck manipulation. Blue's usually the best at doing these things, so you're a little bit limited on what your options are. But when you have everything going, you're probably going to be casting like giant game-winning spells for two mana. So that's very, very exciting. I imagine if you see Lorehold show up at the table, you're going to have to kill it immediately. Yeah.
Yes. This is a kill on sight commander. Even like without the miracle, obviously the miracle part is the exciting part.
Yeah.
But even just being able to rummage each upkeep is like a lot of value. And it kind of has me intrigued, like doing reanimator shenanigans or self-discard shenanigans. We have some cards like Monument to Endurance that care about that. So even outside of like full-on try to play the biggest instants and sorceries possible and miracle them, I feel like there's a bunch of ways that you can build around this card in Commander. And I just love to see an interesting Boros commander. I'm used to like, and I think they've gotten a little bit better at this in recent years, but it used to just kind of be a joke that every Boros commander was some sort of like, put an equipment on me and attack with me. But it's cool to see like another very interesting, I feel like they've done a good job expanding the color identity in Commander of Boros over like the last year or two.
I swear the Boros only attacks meme has been around since like 2012, and I don't think it's been a true since like 2015, okay? But it's persisted. It's persisted. Everybody says, oh, Boros, we're all about attacking. We don't do anything. And then every single year they come up with a new thing that's like, oh, wow, it's the first time Boros is allowed to do something different. And they say that every single year. Every single year we have the same story, but meanwhile, Golgari, name me a freaking Golgari deck. Every once in a blue moon, we'll get something that isn't graveyard-based. Hallelujah. You know?
Or Simic.
But they get
Simic.
A free pass. Yeah, Simic. Oh, I draw cards and I put counters on things. Wow. How innovative. I've never seen Simic ever do that. Is it? Oh, you're doing instant and sorceries matters. No, they get all free pass, but oh, Boros. Oh, no. It's all about attacking over here. I have to make a video about this. Boros has been slandered for too long, and all the other guilds got a free pass.
You might actually be right, because I'm looking at EDH Rec, and yes, there are, like, obviously attacking commanders, equipment commanders, but there's also, like, a Ragast is kind of unique, Feathers up there, that's kind of unique, Jolly Balloon Man's kind of unique, so they're getting more. Ozgear got the like graveyard artifact things going on.
They've got a lot of stuff going on. Obviously they have a niche, but they all have a niche, okay? They're all very much that we do the exact same thing over and over again, and then once in a while we get something different. But Boros, I think Boros has more flexibility than the other pairs, actually. I think Watsia keeps hearing this thing, so they're like, all right, this time we're gonna have something different. And they do more than other things. Golgari, every single single thing is like, oh, wow. I'm doing creatures and graveyard. Wow. That's crazy. Maybe I'll sacrifice the creature too. Boy.
I got one more question for you, Tomer, before we wrap up this podcast. So one last quick one. So I know you did a video on this, and I wanted to ask you, we also got the scene box cards from the Marvel set that's coming out later this summer. They're very blurry. I don't really want to squint to read them. At first glance, I was like, these cards don't look that strong to me. Do I need to try to read these cards, Tomer? Are they relevant enough that I need to read them? Or are they kind of weak and I can skip them for now?
I think they're made intentionally weak. I haven't spoken to WotC at all, haven't heard their intent at all, but what I'm the vibe of these cards is basically they're all like decent effects, but they all cost like one extra mana. If they were all one less mana, you'd be like, oh, this could be kind of playable, but like they're all one more mana than you kind of would want to spend on them. And they're pretty simple, and I think it's on purpose. I think these cards are kind of like meant to be aimed at newer players, to Marvel fans. Like they're meant as they're panorama, so they're meant to be displayed together. So they're kind of like gifts you can give to Marvel fans or people who are interested in Magic 2 that might be into Marvel. And they're meant to be a little bit simple so that when you look at, if a new player looks at these cards, they don't have to like have their brain explode trying to figure out 50 different triggers, which is just the state of Commander design in 2026. Like they're very simple. They come from like, they feel like 2015 style cards maybe. And I think that's a good thing. They don't all have to be bangers. I also saw a lot of people being like, ah, I can't believe they did Black Widow dirty. Oh my God. She had a bad card. As if she's not going to get 15 more Marvel cards. You think there's going to be 15 more Thors?
I wouldn't worry about that.
There's going to be more Spider-Man. You think there's not going to be like Mythic Black Widow that's going to break legacy? Come on. Come on, people, relax.
They remind me of when we used to do intro packs back in the day, and we always used to kind of meme on the intro pack rares because they were new player focused, or then they shifted to Planeswalker decks, and they would print all these Planeswalkers that were like kind of neat but simplified and a little bit too much mana, but they were for the new players. I feel like you nailed it, and that's kind of the same idea here, that these cards probably just aren't designed to break Commander, but they serve another purpose of like getting new players into the game, and even just seeing them on the Goldfish page next to the actual Commander precon cards from the set, there's like 20% of the words in the scene box cards. Like they're just like much more straightforward and readable. And then you get to the Commander cards and there's so much going on. So I think it's good that there's something that a new player can actually understand in the set. But
yeah, it's like not everything has to be for every single player, right? Like new players, if you're going to be making Commander the thing to get new players in, please give them an avenue where they can actually learn the game and not have to be overwhelmed with every single card that has a bajillion different abilities on it. Like you could have different versions, and then if your favorite character got kind of shorted on one of these cards, don't worry, there's gonna be 15 more, and I'm sure the Hulk is gonna be green, don't you worry. We already know there's a Gruul one, and there's gonna be another one that's gonna be even stronger that they have in the back pocket. None of your characters are gonna walk away feeling underpowered, just some versions might be because they're for a different target audience.
Yeah, and even if they don't print the good version of the character you like in this set, we got a lot of Marvel sets coming, so
like
there's plenty of time. They'll get to you eventually, I'm sure. Yeah. But anyway, I think that's our podcast for today. So, Tomer, thanks for hanging out, especially with Krim losing his internet midway through the cast. It would have been just me talking awkwardly to the camera for an hour. So thanks for coming in and talking about the Pro Tour. And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. We'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a lovely week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.